Salutations, my friends. Thank you for tuning in. That's right, a whole new show brought to you by On the Wake Up Radio, titled Fellowship and Freedom. Salutations, my friends, and thank you for tuning in to another edition of Fellowship and Freedom. I'm your host, Moser, Freedom Faction, whichever one you prefer, and I am actually joined by my interesting and awesome guest, Dr. John A. King. John, are you with us?
Hey, mate, how are you? Great to be talking to you again.
Oh, gosh, it is an honor. I was telling our producer before the show, you know, you got this guy over here who's taking down pedophiles, you know, working these missions, these operations and stuff, and he's wanting to come on my show. Talk about honored. So, you know, it's a pleasure to have you.
Thanks, Mike. Thank you.
For people that don't know, let me give you guys a quick rundown on who Dr. John A. King, and that's kind of why you heard me have a little bit of excitement right there. He's a poet. He's an author of his book, Deal With It, Living with PTSD. He also recently just had his event, Keeping Kids Safe in Texas, where he was basically talking about, you know, some of the stuff that's going on with human trafficking, pedophilia, and everything else. He wants to try to help people. On top of that, he's a founder for the Give Them a Voice Foundation, and his story was actually featured in the 2017 movie, Stopping Traffic. So, definitely a pretty important person, definitely out there, definitely making moves. So it is an honor to have you on again with us, John.
Thanks, mate. A privilege to be with you guys and talking to other folk passionate about things that are important.
And there's so many different ways to go about this when looking at it that I don't think people understand, you know, how important it is to just have kind of like a moral basis, some kind of foundation, some kind of passion for what's important. Like really looking at everything that's going on and saying, "Hey, how can I do better?" That's one thing that people really have kind of fallen back from is just trying to generally be a good person, and you know, and hearing about the efforts and the things that you do, you know, it even makes me think I can step up and I can do better. So, you know, just having this kind of fellowship with you, Mr. King, Dr. King, it's amazing, really.
Well, I appreciate it, mate. Just call me John, mate. It makes it easier for you. You'll forget. All good.
John, all right,
yeah,
fair
yeah,
enough.
Thank you. Thank you. I think it is important. I think moral compasses are vital. You know, I went through a stage where I lost mine in the midst of, you know, one of the things with post-traumatic stress is you do lose a sense of your moral compass, the fight and flight thing, the balance of what is right and wrong. And you engage in risky behavior, regardless of what it is, because the sense of parameters literally neurologically change. And I know part of my journey back was coming back to what my center and my core beliefs were, what my view of what right and wrong was, what was that based on? And I really had to ask some of those questions that, to a large extent, I'd taken for granted for a long, long time.
If you could you tell us a little bit about your book, Deal With It?
Deal With It. Deal With It, Living Well with PTSD. The first title, the original title was Deal With It, Living With PTSD, but I was talking with my wife, Melissa, and I think we can live with anything. We can live with poverty, we can live with crime, we can live with cancer. Living well with things is different. And what I've strived in the book to do is to show people how you can actually live well with this silent wound. And it's a wound that comes from any form of trauma. And the sort that I have, like complex post-traumatic stress, was because I was sexually abused as a child from 4 to 16 and by my parents and their friends. And later in life, I had total recall of that, and that led to the onset. That trauma led to the onset of what we would call, you know, post-traumatic stress because of the trauma. And, you know, people often associate PTSD with battle and what happens in battle or first responders, but it's anything that comes out of a traumatic event, not just any traumatic event. And most people, I think 60% of people will experience PTS at some point. But most, either it's a car accident or a burglary or an assault, but most folks get over that within a period of 6 to 12 weeks. It's when it lasts longer and the ramifications are touching a range of different areas in your life that it gets classified differently. So the book looks at what the changes in the brain happen, the changes in behavior, and how you have to re-engineer and rewire yourself in order to deal with those things effectively and efficiently and move forward. Because if you're not moving forward, you're dying, as far as I'm concerned. And we always need to be striving to move forward.
I think that's the most powerful thing I've probably heard in a while. You know, a lot of people, and this is kind of something that we touched on in the previous episode, a lot of people kind of get caught up in staying stuck in the past, or kind of get caught up in staying in, and I don't want to take a book, a page from Kanye's book, A Prison of the Mind, but they stay stuck in these modalities to where they don't try to repair themselves, or to where they don't look within themselves to try to move forward. And it sounds like that's exactly what you're trying to put in this book, is not only dealing with it, but living well after it. Is that about right?
Yeah, you have to live well after. There's no point going on if you're not going to live well after it. And I think, look, bad stuff happens to good people. We don't have a theology of it within the Western church. In America, we don't, and in other Western countries. I think living with tragedy and living with hardship is a part, has always been, I'm a Christian, has always been a part of the Christian faith down through church history. And I think we live in a culture that would like to be happy, clappy, wealth and health, and I'm all for those things. They're very biblical concepts. But so is pain and suffering. And when you take away the very thing that actually sweetens the joy, then you describe it. You don't ever get a resurrection without a crucifixion. So to think that we're going to go through life and only walk in the sunshine is a Disneyland experience, not a Valley of the Shadow of Death thing. And I think we have to always be in forward motion, regardless if it's raining or if it's sunshine. And that's an attitude to life. Just because there's a few clouds doesn't force us to race inside, or doesn't force us to necessarily go get the umbrella. And most folk, I've had to deal with this and learn differently from it, because for me, when I had the recall, it was absolutely paralyzing. I went from speaking in very large churches all around the world, making an incredible salary. I had my own private consultancy business, to a chronic stutter, a fear of crowds. I went from flying, you know, 150,000 air miles a year to not being able to get stuck in an elevator or a panic. And it felt like I was stuck for so many years. But even in being stuck, I was always stretching and searching and hungering to move forward, because I knew if I stayed still, I was going to die. And that's what the book, I spend a lot of time talking about what I failed at in order to show people how you can move on despite what you feel and what you've gone through.
And I'm so glad that you said that. You know, the fact that the pain and the suffering is what, it's not what defines us, but they say pressure makes diamonds. And it's the things that we go through that make us better than what we were before. Like, if you have anyone out there trying to tell you that they're perfect right now, they're probably lying to you. The object in life, and this is only through things that I've learned, you know, through my own hardships, you know, and clearly you've been through a lot more than me. But this is what I've learned, is that the pressure makes us, it requires for us to step up in different ways. It makes us, you know, step into who we're supposed to become rather than who we want to be.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well put, mate.
And it sounds like we touched on this briefly. You said you were a church leader. You were speaking to basically your service, your entire church. Would you care to go in a little bit more detail about that to kind of, you know, give people a little bit of a foundation about you?
Yeah, sure. Well, my first degree is in agriculture, specializing in sheep and pigs, which I think was probably a really good preparation for the ministry. And when I ran a large youth service in Australia, and 1,000 unsaved, unchurched kids a week, and that was all associated with a church in Australia called Hillsong Church, which is a very large, well-known international praise and worship church now. And so that was I grew up in that environment, served there for years, and really worked in very large Christian organizations, worked with a guy called Ed Cole. I was running with a guy called A.R. Bernard and, you know, Eddie Long before we found out about his, predilection for little boys and plane trips. And did a whole bunch of stuff there, traveled internationally extensively, speaking in very large churches, had a church in Texas myself for a long time, and loved it. It was a church of 150, probably 300 people over a week, come through the services, and loved it, mate. I'm from big church, but I love small church. I love that community, that connection. And I loved it, mate. I actually thought that was the last thing I was ever going to do. Because, a lot of people, they run around in ministry, they're looking for the next gig. I didn't want a next gig, man. I had a red brick building with a steeple. In fact, I put a steeple on this red brick building. I loved it, man. And my doctorate is in theology, and I call it now turning, shit into fertilizer, because I think that's what my doctorate's actually in. I forgot it was Sunday, and I said that. Sorry, folks. But
still helping people, though.
Yeah, it is. It is still helping people. But I would never have chosen this journey, and I would never have thought this was the path I would be on. But I am uniquely equipped for this mission, and I think that's part of the glory of, trusting He who can be trusted at all.
And I think because we didn't really touch on this at the start of the show, people are probably wondering, what's so important about Dr. John A. King? Why do you have him on? Because we have a number of guests on the show. We talk about a wide variety of topics. I think people are wondering, why are we hearing about PTSD and church and everything like this? Well, it's because how Dr. John A. King operates is he's basically out there stopping some of these pedophiles and some of these people who are engaging in these kind of what I would call illicit behavior, sexually deviant behavior, wicked stuff. That's the only way that I can describe it. But we have to set the foundation and really look at, the individual going up against the issue. No one ever wakes up thinking, hey, I'm gonna be talking about this today, or hey, I'm gonna be, trying to wish ill will to someone or do something messed up. It's all about the evolution and the steps that have happened all throughout our lives that have led us to this point, to where we can point out these types of things, to where we talk about, suppressed sexual abuse, the fallen nature of man, and how we have to go through this type of pain and suffering to advance. So, with that being said, I want to say, let's take a quick break. And when we come back, we'll talk about more of this. We'll introduce Dr. John King. Sorry. I know you want me to call you John.
No, mate, you call me what you want. Just call me what you want, mate, as long as you're relaxed.
Okay. We'll come back with Dr. King, introduce you guys to him a little bit more, and let him talk about what he does, and we'll get into everything. So with that being said, let's take a break. Ladies and gentlemen, stay tuned. You are listening to Dr. John A. King and Freedom Faction over here on Fellowship of Freedom. We'll talk to you soon. Thank you for tuning back in. And if you guys want to call in or you have any questions, feel free to give us a call at 603-4393, and I am actually joined by my guest, Dr. John A. King. Mr. King, are you with us?
Yes, Mike, indeed.
We were talking in between the break, kind of, and we'll get into you know, more stuff about you and everything else that you're doing later. But we were kind of talking about that recent case with the DJ Avicii, the Swedish DJ Avicii, and kind of how it seems like this is the culture. This is how these people are. If you want to get anywhere in the entertainment industry or anywhere in politics, you know, it seems like it's either pedophilia or some kind of sexually deviant blackmailing behavior.
Yeah, well, the casting couch, you know, the casting couch is a part of the Hollywood culture. And I think that's probably the issue I have with the Me Too movement, is it strikes me as a little bit disingenuous. I understand there's some very strong cases of sexual abuse, both male and female. You know, what Kevin Spacey did was well known in terms of, you know, his trailer call for young men. They were lining up there when he first came from England, and just that his people arranged for young guys to turn up, and Kevin had at it, and that was part of it. And these guys came willingly to participate, and these women went willingly to the casting couch. Now, there were definite rapes, and but I think when we start to, and there is some demonization going on, and no one really wants to talk about that because we don't want to get, because if you do say, hey, listen, I didn't do it, now the big thing is, you know, if she says it, and it's always, unfortunately, it's the feminine side, if she says it, then you have to believe her, you know, believe the victim. We should always believe the victim, but we need to check and verify. And people shouldn't be, I don't think, declared guilty in a court of social media before law enforcement has picked things up and had a look around. And with the Avicii case, I think that situation is just another indicator that it's systemic, and people are now talking about something that's been going on for a long time in the entertainment industry. And it's also in our high court, it's also in our politics. I was aware of the high court in Australia. It was pedophilia at the top level, sexual abuse of young boys was part of the culture of our law system. And we got that from the English.
It's like, even I think it was Cardinal George Pell of Australia. He was recently charged with historic sexual abuse as well. You know, and this is systemic. Like you said, I mean, even as we're discussing this right now, that the star from Smallville, Allison Mack, you know, she confessed that she's trafficking children. She's part of a child sex cult. Like, this is, for some crazy reason, even with all this information that comes out, people still willingly go into this beast, like not ignoring like the fact that these things happen. Like we, like you said, the casting couch. This is what happens. You know, we know that people kind of have to give something up in order to get somewhere, but it seems like it's getting even harder now, or even darker, to where they're kidnapping children, they're recruiting other people, they're doing really mischievous and wicked things.
Yeah, I think that the unfortunate thing we're going to see with the Allison situation, the Smallville side case, is because the way that particular cult was set up, the narrative will talk about how she was misled by a man and therefore it's really her fault, and we're going to move away from her complicity in the whole thing. Which is an unfortunate part, because whenever you, based on gender, give people room to move sideways, and if you think of Kevin Spacey was given a free pass because of his power and influence. And there's other mega names that I could go through, that we've got the who's who of Hollywood, the stars, that we know have been engaged in activities, be it sexual abuse or pedophilia, and that they have not been dragged into this because they are still so powerful, and people are fundamentally scared for their jobs. Now, Weinstein, everyone turned on Weinstein. Now, I don't know if I hear either was that just that horrendous, he sounds like he's a pig of a guy, why they jumped in on that one to get after it. But, mate, it's like everyone wants to make a splash, and then we're gonna forget this in 6 months' time. And that's part of what I don't like is when I see the whole whatever movement it is come up, and it just by willingly going to the casting couch is fundamentally different than being raped or sexually abused as a young child. It's fundamentally different. But when you lump it all in together, it dilutes it to nothing. Because those that have been truly are survivors of sexual abuse or rape and molestation, it makes it a joke for everyone. And people stop believing the conversation. And they don't want to get about having a cultural change.
No, you're right. You're 1,000% right. This is what we talked about in the previous episode. You know, the people that are going through these really traumatic events, these sexually traumatic events, you know, they don't really get the emotional, mental, sexual help and restoration that they need, because it's becoming too popularized, or because it's just being adapted by whatever movement wants to take it this week, and it doesn't get the actual attention that it needs. Our people don't get the actual attention that it needs. It really kind of puts off the actual the impact of all this stuff that's going on. And so, like you said, when you have people who are willingly going to the casting couch, who are saying, you know what, I want to be a, they fell for the typical California American dream. They wanted to go and be a movie star, so they did everything that they did, and they put themselves in that situation, versus people who were actual victims of this. And I think that's one of the more important things that I like to look at this whole fiasco, is just the people who become literal victims of this beast system that's just used to chewing up people and spitting them out.
Mm-hmm. Yep, I agree.
So if we could, let's get into, because this is actually all important, it pertains to where we're going to go next with the show. If we could kind of tell people about your event that you just had, your Keeping Kids Safe event that you just had.
Yeah, we had a collection of a very large diocese in Texas, Catholic diocese, got together, and I don't know how many people there. It was a tremendous event, and we basically just talk a little bit about my background, my past, as an establishment of credibility, and then we talk about the key factors that we've seen, and then the actual prevalence of human trafficking, and try and bust some bubbles in whatever area we're in, so people, you know, engage in the conversation. And then we talk through just very simple keys on how you can keep your kids safe. You know, what sort of applications to watch out for, what the fact that your phone, you know, every child that walks around with a cell phone can be gotten to by anyone and can get to anybody and any material just by a cellular device. And, you know, that's an unfortunate thing. You know, once upon a time, you used to, you know, have a bum and boob magazine and a brown paper bag, and all kids at school would look at it, and I'm not saying that doesn't have an impact, it does, but that was the limit of it. But now it's every child, and it's orgies, bestiality, you know, snuff movies. They can all be got to on their cell devices. So, you know, it's a tragic thing.
It's the mindset too. You know, it's the porn. You know, it's the social media. It's what they see on Snapchat. It's what they see. It's literally what they see. Yeah. There's no filter. There's no. They censor us. It's not the same as filtering things. Like, censorship is not the same as filtering. Before, you know, there used to be a warning saying, "Hey, don't watch this. You know, this might shake you up a little bit." But with today's society, everything is just out there. So, and this is kind of something I wanted to touch on the previous episode that we didn't. But this is basically the internet grooming concept as well. You know, you can have hashtags that are literally keywords for people to go search for porn. And that stuff is out there, and kids will find it way before parents do, because parents don't have enough time to try to filter through it.
Yeah, and there's apps that are designed to hide things from parents. There's one thing called Calculator Percentage, which is looks like a calculator on a child's phone, but it's meant to hide explicit images and videos. And then you've got, there's a range of them. There's, what was I looking at the other day with some people? There's apps that are designed to have conversations with perfect strangers about intimate things. There's another app that is designed to rate people that you know with other people that you know anonymously, so you can tear them up and pull them down. It's a bullying app, is what it is. And there's all these different apps that they've got, and these kids, and all of them have got messaging stuff, and the kids know their parents don't care or whatever it is, and they're not going to find out about it. They're not going to take time to look at their phone, and these kids are just engaged in these activities, and it's their life. It's tough,
it
man.
It's the hypersexualization of children. You know, this is why we literally have 12-year-olds, 13-year-olds over here, you know, booty shaking and trying to go to clubs and over here looking like full-grown women. You know, they're not out there having bake sales or, you know, having lemonade stands or doing whatever it else, you know, 12-year-old kids do. They're too busy feeding into whatever has possessed them, whatever has told them that it's okay. It's okay. It's okay to have this degrading feeling. Accept that. It's okay to put yourself out there in this whorish fashion. And I'll be honest, just say it like it is, because that's what they're doing. It's a mindset to where they're not trying to uphold righteousness. They're not trying to uphold dignity. They're not trying to uphold respect. That's all archaic in these people's eyes. For some strange reason, we now have a society that is basically addicted to pleasure. And this kind of ties into what you were talking about beforehand, you know, with social media being the judge and jury with the Me Too movement. We're losing touch with facts. We're losing touch with logic, and we're losing touch with common sense, basically.
Yes, I agree. And, you know, with the Me Too thing, it's like, look, I reckon it's great. I was so excited when that started, because I thought, finally, we're going to start to have some honest conversations. And I feel horrible for any of those people that have been abused, the men or the women. But I just think we need to... I think for the full impact of anything like that, there needs to be ongoing conversations and ongoing care that the conversation is sincere and real with an outcome separate from revenge. Desmond Tutu was the master of that in South Africa. What he did, I was over there the day that Mandela was released. In Soweto, actually, it was nearly got shot, but anyway, good story, scars and stories. Nice. And I remember when Mandela was over there, and you know, it was an incredible time. It was a historical time. We were driving through Soweto, and the ANC were gathering members of the opposition and black members of the opposition and putting tires over them and burning them like candles. This was not a race war based on color or ideology. There were families split, black versus black, white versus white. It was a horrendous situation. And to see what Mandela and Tutu did with the whole truth edicts that they did, and just needing the stories to be heard with truth and responsibility taken so healing could take place. And I think they're key elements in any situation. Because if not, then you get into victimhood. And you get a situation like we've seen with Bill Cosby. They feel that this is a victory, yet Cosby is still not taking responsibility. So it's a victory. You know, I get it in one way, but I think it's what I would have loved to have seen would be Cosby taking responsibility for a life misled, and I think then healing could have happened for the victims and actually for Cosby and his family. But you know, it's a big hoax.
To have an actual, I don't want to say like an expose, but like a kind of civil discussion about like what actually went on. You know, if he's already been admitted to it, you know, actually have like a discussion and say like what happened. How is there a way that we can fix this type of stuff? because, you know, this is the only thing that's bad about this is he's the only one that got caught. You know, there's more people out there that are doing this than we think, you know, and like you said before, you know, with Harvey Weinstein, for some weird reason, you know, they're letting him get caught the same way Bill Cosby's getting caught. But that's what these people do.
They do. I saw an interesting statement. Like Cosby, a lot of his actions happened 30 years ago, and he's on trial for it now. There's a very famous woman who was convicted of pedophilia 30 years ago, and she's now a very successful television host. And someone was talking about the disparity between the two, and a lot of it was based on gender. She got away with it because she was a woman, or she was allowed forgiveness. But that's, I'm not excusing Cosby, but if we don't start to find a way to crack the nuts and start to crack into these little covens, these little bubbles or communities of jars of despots, and root it out, then it's going to just spring up and produce fruit in a different area.
I agree wholeheartedly. I really do. This is something that I think a lot of people don't understand. You know, there's an entire subculture, or just a secret brotherhood of people who practice this type of stuff. What I'm trying to say is if we're going to hold Harvey Weinstein's feet to the fire, we have to hold Bill Cosby's feet to the fire. We have to hold Cardinal George Pell's feet to the fire. We have to hold Bill Clinton's feet to the fire. We have to hold Jeffrey Epstein's feet to the fire, Kevin Spacey's feet to the fire, because that's the problem right now, is they think that there's no justice. They think they're above the law. And on top of that, there's people that endorse them that say, hey, you know, I support this behavior. I actually condone this behavior. And at some dark levels, people actually also engage in that behavior. But I think what has to happen from people's point of view is we have to have a full court press to where it's like, no, we're not going to let people get away with these types of things just because they're a celebrity or just because, you know, whatever it is. This is messed up human behavior and it has to be called out. Period. Period.
Yeah, I agree, man. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Real quick, if you could, let's because I wanted to go over this too at the start too. If you could talk about your Give Them a Voice Foundation, and then we'll kind of keep going on with the sexual abuse trend thing that we're going on right now.
With Give Them a Voice, I started because after, and I talk about this and deal with it a lot, is that when I had recall of these events, there was no one that I could go to talk about it. I went to church groups, and I was told very clearly that men don't get raped. I went to community groups and told that women don't rape their sons. And I started writing poetry as part of my process in the recovery. I'd never written poetry before. And all of a sudden, I found this immense following of people who were either men who had been abused or the women who were married to them. And they were finding that this art was starting to give them words and a common language that they could talk about. And I thought, you know what, I wrote one poem called The Scream of the Silent. I'm actually going to post that probably this coming week. Do You See Me Now is about men as victims of abuse, and the other one, The Voice of the Silent, is about the millions of voices that aren't heard. And that's where the whole thrust of giving a voice came from. It's like I just sincerely wanted to give a voice, particularly to men and the impact of a voice, of abuse on boys to men. Now we're not like a lot of other human trafficking groups, which are, you know, I'd call them sexist, is because they will only deal with half of the population and will deal with and help anyone. But we'll only work with people that will deal and help with everyone. I'm not going to play that game. But our emphasis has been to make sure that the voice and the conversation and the inclusion of boys and men at the table around this point, you know, we want to help that. We want to help boys get to that table. Just, we don't want to, well, I've been accused of wanting to change the narrative and take it away from the real issue of women's abuse or rape. And it's like, no, I just want to have a seat at the same table, because what I went through is just as valid as any other person on the planet. And the fact that it's not being talked about is just not right. So that's really the thrust behind giving me a voice, and give them a voice, and why we started it. And, you know, we're involved in helping identify victims and perpetrators of human trafficking, and helping predict who is most likely to be victim and perpetrators of human trafficking, and intervening in their circumstances to try and help them.
And have you ever tried to reach out to any of the people in the Me Too movement and try to network with them or talk with them to see if there's some kind of, some kind of collaboration that could work from that?
No, mate, I've got a penis. It gets in the way. Then I'm going to have a chat. So I couldn't be bothered. I just really couldn't. I've had people approach me and we had a great conversation. But mate, time is short. And I can either help people who want to be helped, or I can waste my time trying to climb on a stage with people that don't. I had something really interesting happen. I was supposed to be at an event this month, and it was an event celebrating champions of human trafficking, and they wanted me to host it. It was very flattering, you know, because I think I mentioned last time, we came in as number 8 in the world in terms of thought leaders of the top 100, you know, worldwide. So, you know, this opportunity opened up, and very humbling and great, absolutely. They're going to have a big emphasis on men being abused and trafficked, because it is 50%. In some countries, it's 85 or 90% of those trafficked. You know, once they met me and found out that I was passionate about that, they didn't want anything to do with it, because they wanted me to be passionate about just women and girls on the evening. And I said, well, I'm not going to do it. We walked away from another massive fundraiser in New York for the same thing. These people are working in India, and they will only help women and girls. I understand that if you've got to focus because of resources, but they neglect the fact that 55% of all sexual abuse and people trafficked for sexual exploitation in India, according to the Indian government, are young boys. And they won't even acknowledge, because they're out of New York and it doesn't fit the narrative in America and don't want anything to do with it. But you have a look at the African-American community, and it's not so much in the Hispanic community, but the sexual abuse of young men in the African-American community, it would be horrendous if we could get some true stats on that. Because I'm part Aboriginal, so I'm part black fella in me. You know, my hair's insane. I'm not white enough to be white, not black enough to be black with my issue growing up. And but in Australia, the sexual abuse of young Aboriginal fellas is just horrendous. Can't have a conversation on it. No one wants to talk to that.
It definitely, it's rampant here in America as well. And, you know, everything that you're hitting on, it's 1,000% correct. You know, the fact that people don't look at what happens with, they don't, you hear a lot of people screaming for equality, but you don't really hear people really paying attention to what's happening on the other side of the aisle. Sexual abuse doesn't only happen to females. It also happens to males. Like, boys are sodomized at young ages, and people really kind of sweep that underneath the rug. You know, they think just because it's a boy, that boy should be able to handle it. I think one of the last times we were talking, you were saying it was like, 35 to 45% of the females do some of the trafficking. Is that about right?
Yeah, the stat runs about, it's hard to get them, but it depends. It depends on the nation. And, you know, we're a little bit xenophobic here. We want all the stats to be, because we are such a large people group, want all the stats to only really relate to America, so therefore they're the only relevant ones. You get outside of that into the rest of the universe, and it all washes out completely different. And traffickers of human beings, around 40 to 45% of them are female. So if you're looking for the middle-aged white man trafficking the African-American girl, you're missing out on the Hispanic woman trafficking the white boy, you know.
And this is something we kind of touched on last time, we had talked, there's so many different types of trafficking. It's not just kidnapping. You know, there's also organ harvesting. No. There's also sex trafficking. There's a spectrum, a whole different spectrum of reasons as to why, like, people would take people. And, you know, and this is something I've kind of touched on a little bit, you know, with organ harvesting, as far as the African-American community goes in America, you know, there's genetic reasons for it too, but people don't want to take a step back and really look at that type of stuff because it seems racist. It's like, at the end of the day, it's not racist because money spends the same money to people's lives. That conversion rate, unfortunately, it's different. So people are going to do certain things to get all kinds of money. I mean, how many people do we know that come from different countries, not only that have children here for political reasons, but for also financial reasons? And even on top of that, it's not even their child. You know, it's somebody that they've kidnapped and then put on paper that's their child when there's no legal or blood relation to. I mean, there's so many different situations to where people can get caught up in this soup of craziness that it blows my mind. I mean, to think about it too, you know, the very fact, and this is just one scenario, I'll tell you guys kind of a story from a personal life of mine, of a friend. Basically, he was molested as a child. You know, he was excellent in sports. All the ladies loved him. But you know, you start drinking with him and you have a few beers and then the truth comes out. And, you know, I'm not going to, you know, put out any of his dirty laundry or anything like that, but let's fast forward into a few years later, you know, this guy is basically a prostitute in town, doing all kinds of homosexual stuff with all kinds of different people, whoever will pay, whoever works in the local area. And, you know, you talk to him, you're like, what happened? And you find out he was molested as a child. He couldn't form any of those relationships. There were so many bad things that we didn't see right at the start because it didn't make sense. But there are so many people that are walking around who get caught up in that, who can just become part of a prostitution ring, who can become part of a kidnapping ring, who can be part of a child sex ring. And it blows my mind. It really does.
And that is the story more often than not, mate. I think we said it last time. If you want to really be serious about the sexual abuse of and rape of women and girls, then you're going to have to pay attention to the sexual abuse and rape of boys, because they're not unjoined. They have an impact on both. And it just astonishes me that people are stupid enough to not think that the system is connected, that people are connected, that you affect one half of the aisle, the other half of the aisle is going to suffer. And it goes both ways, man. 45% of all domestic violence victims are male. No one talks about that. They don't want to admit it. You will not find a billboard with that on it. And this is the other thing, too. What's really funny is that America, I love it. I do, and I sincerely love America. It's been very good to me. It's about 10 years behind, you know, particularly in Dallas in fashion. It's like I've never seen, it's unbelievable. You can't even buy a good suit. It's just horrible down here. It's like you have to go elsewhere. I can't believe these people have so much money and dress this bad. It's horrible. You know how we got this spate of ads on TV and they're all that, you know, married with children type, all men are goofballs and idiots type ads that we've still got, and we have to put up with that crap, and you would never see a woman in that. It's illegal to have those in Australia and Britain. They violate the rules. You can't demean another person, but you can here. And it's a real myopic situation, and how some of the things that, you know, we're still acceptable in other parts of the world aren't. You know, it's the massive royal commissions in Australia on sexual abuse, institutional sexual abuse, be it schools or sports or religion, the government, they just open it up. In England too, mate, they've been peeling back the scab over there for years, all through Europe. They're in denial and some other things, you know, raped by, you know, Muslim extremists and some stuff, but it's just we're a little bit, you know, xenophobic. We don't want this. We don't want to take into consideration what's happening around. It scares us. It upsets our numbers.
It's like, you know, to kind of touch on what you're talking about, you know, as far as us demeaning people here in America and how that's kind of frowned upon, you know, in other countries. We, you see it. We are very, I don't want to say we're robotic in our understanding, but we're not very compassionate. And the only compassion that we want our laws to have compassion rather than us like having the understanding that comes with all this. We would prefer for our laws to have that understanding rather than us coming to that understanding naturally. And I know that sounds weird, but the best way I can explain it is, you know, they recently came out with this bill where they're trying to ban the selling of Bibles. Now, what this bill you've heard of it, Assembly Bill 2943.
Yeah. What a lot of
bullshit. Yeah, stupid. But it's more of it. It's more of them trying to take Christianity out of school. And I understand, you know, people have their controversial their controversial stances with religion, whatever. But what that does is that kind of leaves us floating in the wind when we take out.
Yeah, but
go ahead.
Yeah, but think about what you said, mate. Look, I know people have their controversial standards and blah blah blah. No, they don't. Listen, if there's some Muslim guy up there doing it and he wants the Quran in there, no one's going to touch the thing. If you want a whole collection of one-legged lesbian Satanists having their whatever it is, one-legged lesbian Satanists celebrate their book in there, they're going to make that law. It is a very distinct and specific attack against Christianity. And people have rolled over on that point for years and refused to think or recognize that America is the third largest unreached people group in the world behind India and China. The world. We are not a Christian nation. We haven't been for decades. We have this Christian-esque about us, but we need to go back to, mate, understanding we need to evangelize ourselves. We need a collision with Christ in a way that'll change our nation. And it's the beginning of the end in some of that other stuff, mate. You're absolutely right. It's going to get worse before it gets better, unless people wake up themselves. Well, but anyway, I got on a rant and interrupted you. I'm pretty sorry about that.
Oh, no, you're fine. What's happened is I feel like the country's become so accepting of like so many different other religions, beliefs, faiths, practices, and things like this that we've kind of lost ours. That while we've taken the time to understand so many different other cultures and so many other things, we forgot our foundation that gave us that original perspective in the first place. And so in doing that, we've basically forgotten about our roots, and now we just see kind of the unleashing of all of this stuff, of where we do have people that say, oh, well, I can rape children because it's my belief, or I identify as this because, well, that's what I believe today, or I can take as many mescaline pills and peyote trips and acid trips as I can because that's my religion. And even though, you know, that's legally and lawfully, all the stuff that they say is right, true, they can do it. Morally, we all know that this is moving us in a wrong direction. I mean, we really use a lot of, we use too many words to really explain, like, the severity of how things are. Like, we're losing our spiritual orientation, trying to absorb and accept. I'm not even sure what to say. Is it assimilate? Or absorb? What kind of way would you? What word would you use to explain that, Mr. King?
So if I'm sitting down having a talk with a fella, and he's got a certain sort of belief structure, whatever it is, it for some reason. A Christian feels that they have to sit there polite and listen to all that diatribe. And for some reason, the other fella thinks that he's got to shove it down the throat and we're now engaged in a conversation. And if, for some reason, I don't agree with him, I've got no right to say, I don't agree with you, mate, I think you're wrong. And I think we have to grow a set and be prepared to have conversations about things that are important to us. And I think that's the issue, because I really don't think they're important to us. I don't think faith is important to Americans. I think wealth and health is. I don't think our faith is something that we're prepared to die for. We're prepared to have others die for it, but we're not prepared to die for it. It's like protecting ourselves. We're kind of comfortable with someone else bearing arms to save us, but we don't want to take the responsibility morally and ethically to be responsible for our own well-being. And I think part of that challenge is, and if I think it all comes back to a spiritual question. I think the church needs to examine itself and what is the role of the church. And, you know, it's like Sam's Club does not a grocery store make. A big box church is not the house of God. It's or an impactful Christian existence. I think we have to seriously, and I don't think it's a nation that has to search, because there is no such thing as a Christian nation. You can't have a Christian car or a Christian music or a Christian artist or a Christian nation. You've got Christians that live in a nation, and our nation, and it was the majority of Christian forefathers that wrote our Constitution. And I think until Christians take responsibility for their faith, and that doesn't mean that you're exclusive. In fact, it's very clear in the Bible that we are known for our compassion and our acceptance, but also for our lack of compromise in the middle of a pagan society. And I think that's part of the bigger things that we might need to be asking ourselves.
No, I agree. I mean, you hit it on the nail. You know, you're talking about how we have this kind of notion of what Christianity could be. And even then, you know, we have a lot of people that buy into, I'm so glad you made that distinction, that we're not a Christian nation. We just have Christians living within this nation. That's great. That was awesome. Because it's true. We would want people to have the same kind of beliefs. We would want people to come to the same kind of perspectives and the same kind of truths. But that's not how the world works. And it's naive to think that way. But at the same time, it's also good to share these kinds of perspectives and to have these kinds of discussions with people, because if anything, that strengthens your faith by literally having discussions with other people about, you know, what they believe in, what they practice and where they're going with their faith. That should only refine us in our faith. And so I think what's happening now is, because we see so many different attacks coming at us, people who are Christians, people who believe in the Bible, and things like this, we're not necessarily sure how to react, because we haven't really acted in any kind of way beforehand. Like we've just been in a state of peace. We've not really had to, like you said, stand our ground, and then at the same time reaffirm our faith.
Yeah, well put.
Well, I think it's just important, because, you know, again, same thing you just said, protect yourself. Would you leave your faith? Would you leave your life in the hands of someone else? No, you wouldn't. You would protect yourself. You would try to find ways to defend yourself, to arm yourself, to put on every kind of weapon that you had, to try to use every single tool at your disposal. And if that's the case, you're clearly aware of your situation. You're having situational awareness, realizing that you need to be in a defensive stance, that there's some kind of oppressive or attacking force is coming at you. And I think that's where we need to be a lot at these days. I mean, look at literally everything that we just talked about in the show already. How is that not an attack not only on your faith, but on your beliefs and on everything that's around you? That's why we have to tell people to stay vigilant, because of how many different things are going on. I mean, we're like literally having a discussion about the spiritual warfare that's manifesting here. We're having, unfortunately, we're having a calm conversation about things like suppressed sexual abuse, institutional abuse, and everything else that's going on, because of how prevalent this stuff has become in society. Because people are somehow, they've lost that moral compass. Like we talked about at the start of the show, they're not really getting what's happening in this mass, in the scale of things. And it's just gradual, it's incremental.
Yep, exactly, Mike. Yeah, exactly.
Well, let's, all right, here's what we're going to do. We're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we're going to be talking about more of your anti-human trafficking efforts. I have a few more questions I'd like to ask you about a few other things as well, but we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to be getting into more on this. Ladies and gentlemen, my guest is Dr. John A. King. I want to say thank you guys for tuning in. If you have any questions, feel free to call us at 678-603-4393. We'll talk to you soon. Stay tuned. And we are back. Thank you guys for tuning in. Thank you guys for being here. If you guys want to call in or you have questions, feel free to give us a call at 678-603-4393. We are with our guest, Dr. John A. King, discussing all things crazy, things like the moral compass, the Me Too movement, child sex trafficking, institutional abuse, and so much more. Dr. King, are you with us?
Yes, Mike, I am.
Thank you. It is always a pleasure. Like I said, thank you for giving us your time. So if we could, let's get into things like the internet grooming. This is kind of something that we had touched on earlier in the show. But if you could you kind of give a little bit more of an in-depth description of what internet grooming is for people that don't know?
Internet grooming is like a whole bunch, any sort of grooming. It starts with engaging someone on an emotional level, building a relationship, isolating them from friends, families, and peers, becoming their sole source of emotional gratification or physical gratification, sometimes financial gratification. And as a result of that, they get isolated. They're not reaching out, they're not touching, they're in unfamiliar territory, and therefore the groomer is their compass, is the one that says, okay, it's okay, we can do this, we cannot do that, et cetera, et cetera. And that whole process takes time, and they're very, very patient. It can take between 6 or 8 months to get someone from a grooming phase to engaged in trafficking activities of whatever form, in whatever form they take.
And whenever you're talking about the grooming, we're basically talking about things kind of like that show Catfish, right? Where there's usually some creepy or perverted person on the opposite end talking to a younger child, be it a boy or a girl, and they're basically conditioning that child to get used to, like you said, having that person be their moral compass, so to speak. Is that right?
Yeah, it is. And it can be the internet is where a lot of it happens, but it can be in schools, it can be in churches, it can be in a range of those places where people are, in positions of power and influence and are using them for their own gain and gratification.
And you're saying, now one of the mediums that people use is Facebook. They're using social media.
Yeah.
They're using Snapchat, right?
Yes, absolutely. Twitter is a real porn hub on the internet. Instagram is where a lot of people are found because they're wanting to, they're wanting to be the next Kim Kardashian. They're wanting to be the next fashion model, and the Instagram model mindset. And so that's a very big thing. And Facebook, because of the closed groups that you can have there, is where a lot of changing of sexploitation takes place, where a lot of people end up sharing intimate stuff, watching intimate stuff by videos, and that then normally leads to an invitation, a set of air tickets or something, another opportunity, and that's when you get into the sick trafficking scenarios that we're used to.
And it always starts out simple with just a friend request or a simple message, and then because people put so much stuff out there on the internet, like you said, even with the Instagram model, these people act as literal predators, wolves in sheep's clothing, and they try to slowly but surely gain their trust and wiggle their way into their lives. I think that's, to me, that's scary to think about that type of stuff.
Yeah.
It's
Yeah, wild. It is. It just surprises me how stupid people are. You know, like here you are, you're on a cell phone, and for some reason you want to trust absolutely implicitly with your life stories and details someone else on the other end of the cell phone, that all their intentions towards you are good. It's like, you're an idiot. I can't believe it. So, you know, I think, you know, you don't know that. And if you're not sitting across the table from that person, you don't know that person. And even if you are, you don't know that person, you know, in a lot of cases. And I just, you get what I'm saying, yeah, right?
Yeah, no, I hear you. It's just, it's wild. Unfortunately, we think everybody on the internet is friendly, and with how things are these days, people can make up personalities and aliases basically overnight. You know, it's wild, and people are so unfortunately naive. They believe things only in one dimension, only because they can see one dimension, and it's crazy. But you know, this again ties into discernment, kind of where things are socio. Politically right now. But another thing I wanted to ask you about, and this is, we touched on it on the previous episode, but you said you were working on a pedophile search app, or is it a software?
It's actually a new social media platform that's coming out in June or July. It's massive. It's yeah, it's massive, and it works on predictive behavior, not transactional. You know, when you go to Facebook and you leave there and go to Twitter or Amazon, all of those are transactional. This is behavioral. Actually, what is the motivation psychologically behind someone's behavior? Why do they look at the things they look at, and why do they search? You know, those sorts of things, and the ability to be able to use that information. They've been using it for sales for years. And what's different with the opportunity we've got is to be able to use it to identify victims and perpetrators of human trafficking. Now, there are some other great groups out there doing it, but they don't have access to the software and the artificial intelligence that we do. This one group, they've been preparing this platform for 11 years now, and they've given us, access and the ability to be able to use their tech for human trafficking.
I'm not sure if you know any of the specifics of the platform, but do you know what kind of, points or bullet points or anything that they're specifically looking for, like behavioral markers that identify these people's patterns?
No, we're
pedophiles.
Yeah, we're working with law enforcement to. And academics and non-profit groups to whatever you garbage in, garbage out. However you program the bots go looking for that. So we're working with those people to, let me just say, we're refining our search parameters based upon what we've learned over the last period of time to a point that it will identify people to a 97% accuracy.
Wow. That's crazy. And then, I mean, does it compile like a case or anything like that? Or is it just able to identify that these people are indeed doing these types of things? Does it create like a case that you can take to court? Or is it just like identifying these people throughout society?
No, how we work is we work like an anonymous tip line. So someone rings into the police and they leave a tip or a hint, and then they go about doing it. What we're doing is we're providing law enforcement with a list of people and it's like, here are our tips or our suggestions on people you should look to in relations to this crime. And that way, all civil liberties are left in place, and boots on the ground still are doing, solid police work in order to gather evidence, traffic stops, whatever it is. It's and that's the way that we've found that doesn't infringe on you know, people's rights, privacies, and gets around some of those issues. And I'd say get around in terms of we're trying to fudge things, but it addresses those issues, probably a better way to put it. So, and it's support of law enforcement, which is what we want to do. We don't want to start up a militia that's running around just, you know, tapping people because they're, you know, dicks. We want to be working within the system so that due process takes place.
Like you said, so their civil liberties aren't violated. You're doing this 100% legit is it safe to say publicly accessible information?
Yeah, by and large. But these people can bury stuff. You know, they can bury stuff in. So one case we're working at the moment is, I don't know if I mentioned this last time, a young boy, $10,000, and was the fee to an individual to watch him being anally raped to death. And they found his body in a dumpster. So the websites that host those videos run on what they call a floating IP address that changes every, you know, a third of a second. The web page is still static, but you can't track the IP address because it's changing. So it's being able to harvest and mine that information and saying, okay, well, we've harvested this or dark web stuff, we've harvested that, and we're compiling that with the other stuff and saying, you need to have a conversation with this person.
That's crazy.
So it's not only the surface web, but you know, the subterranean stuff where all the really fun people hang out.
And I'm sure do you ever get any tips or anything from the dark web, or is that mainly where some of your guys' operation takes place, if you don't mind me asking?
Yeah, we combine them both. That's part of what the software does, is it trolls everything and brings back and collates the information from every source that's available. And what's interesting in part of what it does is it goes back, for instance, someone was to hack your computer and put a bunch of child porn on there, and it's been on there for, say, 3 months, and all of a sudden the FBI kicks down the door and said, well, you've had this child porn, and you go, man, I didn't do it. See, what this software will do, will actually have a look at a snapshot now, we'll go back a week and say it was there, 2 weeks and say it was there, 2 months and say it was there, 4 months and say it wasn't there, 6 months wasn't there, 12 months wasn't there, 18 months wasn't there. This is not in the behavior of this person. So even when the bots are looking, they will look at that situation and go, no, and they'll just move on. They won't make it it won't become a hot spot for investigation. It's advanced tech, very advanced tech.
I'm sure there are a decent amount of people out there who are using other people's IPs while they go out there and just do sketchy, deceitful, manipulative stuff, and then just kind of use somebody else as a pawn. I'm sure there are people out there that are doing that type of stuff. But Dr. King, if you could you give a quick shout out to all of your platforms to where people can find more of your work.
Okay, thanks, mate. People, please, if you want to see more of what we're doing, Instagram at Dr. John A. King. You can find me there. And on Facebook, I think it's Dr. J. A. King. Website is www.drjohnaking.com. And I'd love to connect with folk and have a chat. And thanks very much for your support, guys, and having me on your show. And I hope you continue to see great things and touch many lives and help transform our society one life at a time. It's great partnering with you.
Having conversations like this and being able to get this kind of insight as well as hear your information, Dr. King, this has definitely been an honor. We'll definitely have to do it again real soon. Thank you for coming on.
No worries, mate. Appreciate you both. Be well. Bye-bye. Thanks, folks.
Be well. So we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to be talking about some of this Avicii news that's going on, as well as some of this Smallville actress stuff that's going on, this Allison Mack case. But there is so many different things to look at when just trying to look at this concept of not even concept, this reality of sex trafficking, of human trafficking, of child sexual abuse, satanic ritual abuse, and so much more. But we're going to take a break, and when we get back, we'll be talking about this and more on the other side. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for listening to Fellowship and Freedom. This was Dr. John A. King and Freedom Faction. Stay tuned. Right. I'll talk to you soon. Salutations, my friends, and thank you for sticking around. You are tuned into Fellowship and Freedom. Wow. Was that not a powerful episode? I hope you were taking notes. I definitely know. I did. I will be putting in the first part of that episode, of that interview, in the link description below so you guys can go listen to it, because there's so much information that we went over. You guys really have to understand how deep this type of stuff goes. And so that's why it's important that we set the kind of foundation of everything else that's going on, of how this is still operating in plain sight. No one sees it. No one asks questions. No one ever says, hey, you know, why are so many kids getting taken a day? I think it's like 7,000 or 8,000 children that get abducted every day. Somewhere around that line. Why are people getting kidnapped? Why are organs getting taken? Why do we have so many forced service maids? Why do we have so much of this stuff going on? I mean, what is modern day slavery? People aren't asking these types of questions. And whenever you have these kinds of episodes where we really look into this type of stuff and look at the mechanics of that underbelly, of that occult underbelly that's happening right alongside us, you get some scary answers. You really do. I mean, let's take a look at this Smallville actress, right? Allison Mack. She confessed that she sold children, that she worked in senior management for a Hollywood pedophile cult, a second in command, right? It was her job to lure in children into the cult and sell them to the elite, sell them to pedophiles. I mean, what is Harvey Weinstein? And as I said before in the interview, if we're going to call out Harvey, we're going to call out Kevin Spacey, we got to call out Bill Cosby as well. We got to call out Cardinal George Pell. This is somebody that I've talked about time and time again. Somebody within the church who has been charged with historic sexual abuse. But unfortunately, he won't be going to court because his lead witness was found dead, murdered in their apartment. But Bill Cosby, he's facing 30 years. Let's jump back. Like I said, let's bring this to the modern day equivalent of what's going on. Everything that we talked about with Dr. King is very true. But how does that play into where we're going today? As I said before, with the Smallville actress, Allison Mack, procuring children for pedophiles in Hollywood. As I said before, with Dr. King, this is something that is prevalent. This is part of their culture. This is what they do. I had another show or another episode with Lori Alexander of the Underground Resistance Network, where we talked to somebody who was a survivor of satanic ritual abuse. We called her Survivor Chris. In this episode, we actually found out the very same thing that I had talked to you guys about in the start of the show with one of my acquaintances that basically ended up becoming a male prostitute. The situation with Survivor Chris was something similar. Her mom had molested her as a child, and then it wasn't until she was about 12 or 11 or so that the occult started to come in. Now, what I'm trying to get at by drawing these two parallels is how this is, for some strange reason, this is that formula that surfaces. And then whenever we take this idea and then look at it on a celebrity kind of scale, you know, with Allison Mack, with Harvey Weinstein, with Bill Cosby, with Kevin Spacey, with all these people, this is what they do. They're out there doing pedophilic things, not even really for pleasure. A lot of the times it's for power. You know, and now we have, unfortunately, DJ Avicii, I've never called him DJ Avicii. I just called him Avicii. You know, known for his song Levels, he was actually found dead after exposing this pedophile ring. Apparently, he came out with his new music video for A Better Day, where he basically talks about exposing, you know, a pedophile rings. Now, where else have we heard about celebrities being killed for exposing pedophile rings? Chester Bennington of Linkin Park. Chris Cornell. I forget which band he's with. But what I'm trying to point out is kind of a cause and effect style situation. The cause being that we're trying to expose pedophile rings, organized human trafficking, and how these things are very, very real, and the effects that they have on society. The effect is we either get shut down, discredited, or not acknowledged whatsoever. And this is kind of what Dr. King was talking about with the Me Too movement, on how it's supposed to be for people who have been victims of sexual abuse, but they're not including the males because it doesn't fit the narrative. The Me Too movement being used as a springboard to allow for humans to begin, for us to talk about these types of things, for people who have been victims of sexual crimes, of sexual abuse. I mean, apparently, and this is something I had to learn being outside of college, apparently there is a massive culture of rape in American colleges today. People, you know, passing out pills, passing out barbiturates, passing out anything, sleep pills, downers, you know, or even that, you know, just getting hopped up on uppers or narcs, you know, doing all kinds of stuff like that. Rape is an epidemic. And all this stuff is because of, again, what we're talking about, this hypersexualized culture we have. It's where we have somehow refused our sexuality and suppressed it to where now it's just raging. It's a full-blown sexual destruction deviation mode. And we don't really know what to do. This is why you have so many different things happening within just that field itself. This is why we're having like a whole discussion about gender, because of things that are going on within this realm. And that's just one aspect of it. You know, me and Dr. King talked about this in the previous episode, you know, how they're basically trying to break down the family unit. You know, about how 95% of children that come from same-sex marriages contemplate suicide. 5 don't. Breaking up of the family unit, the destroying of the male, the destruction of the female, you know, just getting away with not even having kids. People these days don't want kids because they think it's too much of a hassle. But where are we going to go if everybody stops having kids? You see that, and that's a lot of what we were talking about as well with this episode itself, the breaking down of the family unit. People don't see that how if they're sexualized at very young ages, they end up becoming victims to this type of behavior. They're not able to form authentic and real relationships. They're not able to bond with people. They're not able to really experience the other part of being human because of that abuse that took place. And that's just for the man itself. Now, for females, it's probably even worse. The point is to recognize that the abuse is happening across the board and not showing favoritism to either one, and at the same time trying to offer a remedy for the entire poison that has somehow found itself in our culture, in our society. I don't understand, you know, I don't understand how family members can molest other family members. I don't understand how a male or female even could be sexually attracted to somebody that could be their child. I don't understand a lot of the things that go on in this, like I keep saying, this sexually deviant culture or the sexually deviant society that we find ourselves living in. But that's, again, because of what we're being introduced to, what we're being shown. I mean, you know the word twerk. You know what the phrase booty shake means. Do you know what the word abstinent means? Do you know what the word abstain means? Do you know what celibacy means? No, we don't. We don't know that because we live in a time frame where we're supposed to have everything going on all at once. Give it all out there. people wonder why we have this way about us, to where we can't love, to where we can't understand, to where we can't really empathize and have compassion towards deeper things. Crazy. Crazy. I definitely did not mean to go on this crazy rant with all this. Definitely meant to look at some of this that's going out with this. But let's look into this real quick. The Smallville actress, right? This one that's being charged with, I guess, child sex trafficking, who's out bring children. Let's really talk about that and how that pales, or how that compares to things. This is from your newswire. It says, Smallville star confesses she sold children to the Rothschilds and the children, or to the Rothschilds and the Clinton. Smallville star actress Allison Mack has confessed that she sold children to the Rothschilds and Clinton during her time in the child sex cult. According to police, Allison Mack worked in senior management position for the Hollywood pedophile cult NXIVM, NXIVM, a second in command. It was her job to lure children into the cult in order to sell them to Hollywood elite pedophiles and powerful politicians. FreeThoughtProject.com reports, quote, as alleged in the indictment, Allison Mack recruited women to join what was purported to be a female mentorship group that was, in fact, created and led by Keith Raniere. The victims were then exploited both sexually and for their labor to the defendant's benefit. U.S. Attorney Richard P. Donahue said in a statement, the cult was finally exposed when the daughter of former Dynasty actress Katherine Oxenberg became a member. Oxenberg told the New York Times that she became concerned after she saw that her 26-year-old daughter, India, was extremely emaciated from dieting and suffering from serious health problems. Quote, some people have said this is a voluntary sorority. The women I've spoken to tell a far different story, Oxenberg said. Coercion is not voluntary. Extortion is not voluntary. Blackmail is not voluntary. When these accusations hit the news, other women, including actress Sarah Edmondson, came forward to tell the same story of blackmail, the branding, as well as the forced labor and forced sexual activity. Raniere is also accused of having a history of pedophilia, with accusations that stretch back over 20 years, involving girls as young as 12. In 2012, several women were interviewed by the Albany Times Union about the coercive sexual experiences that they had with Raniere when they were with young girls. One of the women in the case was found dead of a gunshot wound before she was able to give the interview. Her death was ruled a suicide. The U.S. Attorney's Office requested to have Raniere held without bail in a letter to the court stating that he was a known child predator. And this is kind of where, you know, whenever I was talking to Dr. King, as you guys heard me ask with his pedophile searching platform, what kind of tickers, what kind of markers, notifiers, what patterns did they see that show this person's a pedophile? What do they do? How do we know that this person becomes a predator? Because when he had talked to me about this idea before, my first question was, you know, as a kid, you grow up, you have Halloween, you're going trick or treating, right? And as a kid, it might be different for other people, but for me, you know, I was told, you know, you stay away from that house, or you stay away from this house, or you stay away from that house, because these are all child molesters. These are all pedophiles. You stay away from them because they're predators. Any other house you can go to, you're more than fine, but you stay away from those houses. And so whenever he tells me that he's making a pedophile search platform, my thought immediately went to, well, shoot, where did that initial system go to where I was a child? He informed me that that violates their civil liberties, that violates their privacy. You know, we can't do those types of things. But what he's doing by creating the very thing that he's doing is he's bypassing all of that and merely looking at the platforms, basically accessing metadata to create a database of child predator predictive behavior. But continuing on with this article and pointing this type of stuff out, because we really have to see, we really have to know. Before I get back into this article, and I'll point this stuff out, you know, talking about child predators and people trafficking children and everything else like this, you know, what is drag queen story time? whenever you have these people who are either confused, curious, or pretty sure in their gender fluidity, whatever you want to call it, but they're reading things to children and at the same time trying to give off this weird feeling of acceptance, that's not natural. What that is indoctrination, okay? And more of this type of stuff is happening than you think. I've commonly talked about this when looking at pedophilia and how these people operate, what they do, how they procreate, right? Because pedophiles can't have children. What they do is they sexualize other children to basically procreate, to reproduce. A pedophile creates a pedophile by molesting a child, unfortunately. And that's why, for me, I want to know where these people are. Not so I can go out there and go kill them. God, no. They need to be put in their place. They need to be reined in. And the more information that we can have of these people doing these types of things, the better. I don't want these people reading to my children. I don't want these people teaching my children. I don't want these people teaching your children. It's not a thing about being tolerant. It's a thing about being honest. Like, this is, that's, let me get back into this article. It says, although this extremely important detail is being left out of most mainstream reports, one of the main charges in the criminal indictment against Rainier and Mac is sex trafficking of children. And right here, there are three Title 18 U.S. codes where it's sex trafficking of children or by force, fraud, or coercion, conspiracy to commit sex trafficking of children by force, fraud, or coercion, and attempt to establish peonage, slavery, involuntary servitude, and human trafficking. So I got to count for sex trafficking, conspiracy to commit sex trafficking, and an attempt to enslave other people. This is what this Smallville actress is involved in, right? This is what she's getting charged for. And what's even crazier is, like I said before, when talking with Dr. King, this is that culture. How many people do you think within the Hollywood inner circle of elitist actors and actresses have got some kind of strange agreement like this going on? Like I said before, it's not about pleasure. It's about power. It's about blackmail. It's about literally having people work underneath you because they've been so compromised. I mean, it's like what you hear with the Scientologists. It's what you hear with a lot of these people. They try to collect as much information on you as possible so that they can use it against you, so that it can be weaponized. Sounds like Facebook. Continuing on with this article, it says, a quick search for Allison Mack's arrest report or charges, as reported by the mainstream media, will not yield any mention of children. Most mainstream reports only mention sex trafficking and ominously omit that the charges were for sex trafficking of children. Exactly why the media is refusing to report this remains a mystery. Another important aspect of this case has largely been overlooked is the connections that this organization has to high-level political figures and finance. The organization worked much like a pyramid scheme, collecting regular fees from its members, but the majority of the funding, over $150 million, came from the trust funds of the C. Graham heiress, Sarah and Claire Bronfen. Their involvement with Rainier began in 2002 and has been very public and controversial, with other members of the Bronfen family distancing themselves from their sisters in the press. The Bronfen family has a very close ties to the Rothschild banking dynasty, with members of both families belonging to many of the same companies, including their joint financial firm, Rothman and Rothschild. So I'll put this link in the description bar below so you guys can go check it out yourself, because for the sake of time, we have to kind of move on so I can look at this Avicii exposing the pedophile network. And at the same time, this is something that kind of came out last week that a lot of people didn't really pick up on because they're not tied into this. But apparently, a German prosecutor is visiting Chile for updates on sex crime investigations of a World War II immigrant colony. Now, what is this World War II immigrant colony? If people have been paying attention to some of my Cold World works, you've heard me talk occasionally about the Black Flame. What is the Black Flame? The Black Flame is a certain set of Nazi pedophiles within the Vatican who were able to escape the Nuremberg trials and basically find themselves in North America and basically continue their operations. So what I'm trying to say is you have Nazi pedophiles, people who were practicing more of this dark occult magic in the Nazis, being found out. So this, to me, I find it marvelous because I know what that means. They found that certain sect of people who were practicing the occultism within the Nazi structure, and some of them are getting prosecuted. So that's good news. But to kind of jump ship over here to Avicii, to Avicii's death, what we're still looking at, again, is this pedophile ring. Now, Allison Mack, she's going through the whole... She's probably trying to do it the right way so she doesn't get killed. She's going through the whole political theater to where she's getting tried, to where there's articles and everything that being put out about her. People like Avicii, Chester Bennington, and Chris Cornell, they don't get that kind of treatment because of the pull and the influence that they have. They were going to get killed. That's why they're killed. But apparently, information is coming out about Avicii trying to destroy pedophile rings. He was trying to basically protect vulnerable children, exactly what Dr. King is doing, protecting children from abuse and rape. Like, before I get into this, you know, with the time that we have left, before I get into this, I think it's imperative still to underline the fact that this is what these people do. This is what these people do. There should be a people that are kind of hip hop heads like me. I think this is kind of crazy. This is the influence or the reach that we have. I put up this post on the page about Avicii being Illuminati sacrifice, right? The article's up on the website as well. Immortal Technique commented, saying he basically agrees. He doesn't agree 100%. He says this in his own words. He doesn't agree 100%, but he does agree that this is very real. And why am I pointing out Immortal Technique and DJ Avicii? Because what we're talking about is how at higher levels, people who are influencers, who are celebrities, who are politicians, who are actresses, who do these types of things, they're fully aware of what's going on. They understand that they may not have had to do certain things to acquire power, but other people have had to do certain things to acquire power, which makes them a part of a whole another organization, which makes them part of a whole another faction, a group, an organization. Like, it makes them part of something different. So you can have certain celebrities that do come out and talk about certain things, and then other celebrities, because they've been compromised, because they are part of that whole agenda, they're not allowed to. Avicii being killed, he wasn't allowed to. I put this up April 27th. It says, Illuminati sacrifice, DJ Avicii found dead after exposing pedophile ring. It says, disturbing links between the death of Avicii and the elite pedophile rings he was working to destroy continues to surface, with friends of the DJ and producer stating that the 28-year-old multimillionaire had dedicated the rest of his life to protecting vulnerable children and exposing the international elite predators that abuse and rape children for sport. Swedish superstar DJ Avicii died under suspicious circumstances last week at Muscat Omen, and his death rocked the entertainment world. Avicii, born Ted Bergling, was a pioneer of the contemporary EDM scene and a rare DJ capable of selling out arenas around the world. He won 2 MTV Awards, 1 Billboard Music Award, and earned 2 Grammy nominations. His biggest hit was Levels. I love that song. However, it is his explosive directorial debut video, quote, For a Better Day, that has raised fears that the 28-year-old Avicii's untimely death was not natural. The video, For a Better Day, is deeply disturbing and doesn't hint so much as shout from the rooftops about what Avicii knew about elite pedophile rings. According to a friend of Avicii, he had become passionate defenders of vulnerable children around the world after witnessing, quote, unimaginable horrors while mixing with the world's entertainment industry and political elite. For his first video as a director, Avicii chose to shine a spotlight on the elite pedophilia epidemic. for a Better Day, tells a story about children being sold as sex slaves to elite child traffickers. The video shows two children escaped by jumping off a cliff into the ocean before returning as adults to get exact bloody revenge on the powerful elite pedophiles who abused them as children. By appearing as one of the grown-up children in the video, Avicii clearly demonstrated which side he was on, and despite record-level warnings that the video was commercial suicide, decided to make it clear that exposing the elite predators was more important than making money. Didn't agree. And to that I have to say, you know, rest in peace, Avicii. Because the very same thing happened to Chester Bennington. He tried, and you can hear it in some of the songs as well. You could hear through the lyrics the abuse that took place. You can hear through the music that's being carried out, the message that's being, the emotion that's being felt, the pain that he was going through. And then the powerful video that Avicii made illustrates that just as well. We're talking about how there is a organized occult operation of people hiding in the background who are literally trafficking in men's souls. And that might sound crazy to some people, but that's because you're not really listening to what's going on. Notice how Avicii dies, and then Kanye comes right out of the air saying all this other crazy stuff. No, don't pay attention to Avicii, pay attention to me. It's all bread and circus. But that's the whole point in doing what we're doing, is trying to take over the culture, inject consciousness into it, really be aware of what's going on. I mean, we're literally talking about how they're manipulating society to where we just become so sexually deviant that physically, mentally, emotionally, spiritually, we don't care. We're literally trafficking in men's souls, and we don't care. People don't care. Not as long as the internet's still on. Not as long as they can still send Snapchat pictures. People don't care. And yeah, Bill, like I said, with Bill Cosby, you even have him facing 30 years in prison because of this. Because of this Me Too movement. And I couldn't agree more with what Dr. John A. King was saying. You know, you have so many people that are playing into the Me Too movement now that it's not getting the appropriate attention. And to be honest, that's why we're still having these types of shows, because the Pedogate phenomena, the Pizzagate phenomena, that's not something that's going away. This is something that's been here. This isn't for show. There is a real phenomena going on with this. And because we don't understand it doesn't mean that it's not happening. Just because there are things happening on the surface doesn't mean that there aren't still things happening on the subsurface, underneath things. And that's why we have to remain vigilant. Like I said, holding Bill Cosby to the fire, holding Kevin Spacey to the fire, holding Harvey Weinstein to the fire, holding Cardinal George Pell to the fire, holding this Allison Matt to the fire. And if that's the case, you know, there's a list of celebrities out there who are already doing it. My God, I've had to grow up with R. Kelly, hearing about him. And again, there are people who willingly know these types of things and know this goes on behind the scenes, but they voluntarily give themselves over. They didn't have to sign a contract. The contract was that they showed up. The contract was that they participated. So if you guys didn't learn anything, go back and replay this episode. Go click some of the links. Go look at some of the charges that the Allison Mack lady is receiving. Go look at what Bill Cosby's going through. Go look at the sketchy scenario surrounding Cardinal George Pell and how one of his witnesses was killed. And on top of that, make sure you go back to Dr. John A. King's website and pay attention to the work that he's putting out, because this is why it's important that we have these types of discussions. This is why it's important that we have somebody who's willing to say, look, I went through these things. There was no support system for me. there was no one out there that was trying to recognize what happened to me. There are hundreds of people out there like me that have to go through these things alone because we refuse to acknowledge this epidemic. If you think 50% of what we have discovered and discussed within the Pedalgate phenomena is crazy, think about the 50% of that 50% of the people who have gone through it who aren't receiving attention. That's what's even worse, is the fact that we can't help those people. So make sure you guys go to Dr. John A. King's website. Find him on Instagram. Go read his book, Deal With It. Because if we don't really understand the enemy and enemies plural that we're up against, there's no way that we can really be effective. And while these things are happening, it's not our place to get caught up in fear. We have to let this fear can do one of two things. It can either motivate you to get your stuff together, or it's gonna put you in a box. It's gonna make you easily controllable. I hope what we're talking about with this really makes you become more proactive, really makes you start looking at what's going on. Realize that this culture that we've been given, this synthetic culture that's been created by MTV or BET or the radio or whoever the big six are that are controlling things, this isn't real culture. This isn't how people are supposed to be reacting. These people are so disassociated from reality, they wouldn't know real if it smacked them in the face. However, that's all I really have for you guys. I want to give a quick shout out to our to Ra on the boards, helping us take these breaks, helping us get all this good stuff in for you guys. And our producer, Cindy Ashby. Make sure you guys check out the website, www.onthewakeup.radio. We finally got on SoundCloud. We're on YouTube, iTunes, Google Play. You can find us everywhere. We are branching out. And like I said, guys, really, thank you for being here. I try to make sure that you guys have a wide variety of guests, a wide, diverse amount of knowledge that you guys can pull from, because that's how you have to look at this. There is no one right answer. What might seem right for a certain situation doesn't fit another scenario. We have to understand what's going on. Like I said, make sure you check out Dr. John A. King. I will put all of his information in the description bar below. And if you guys have any questions, feel free to email me. I'll put it there as well. And remember, guys, stay vigilant. Expose lies and share truth. This is Noise Era, Freedom Faction, and Dr. John A. King. Out.